Mr. Henderson, Reel 24. Have you any other memories of Hanover?
Oh, yes, they were very happy. It was a summertime, of course. And we had these beautiful concerts. Geraldo came out with his band. And another well-known, Louis Levy, came out with his big band to the theatre in Hanover that we'd sort of done up, I think. There was all kinds of shows that we saw. Some really tip-top shows came to Hanover at that particular summer. Regimental sports, swimming sports, happy days. A lot of hard work. The guards were... eventually, when the control commission took over, which was, I don't know, 3 months after the war finished, the civilian people came out from England to take over the... They were called the control commission for Germany. There were civil servants that took over the running of the place, and they were a big help. So the guards sort of, we didn't have to guard the places. They developed their own German security for the German police and things like that, because when the war ended, there was no law at all. Our law was the only law that there was, so the control commission eventually got that organised, and it eased us a lot. We get out on with our own duties. And I think we were in Hanover from May till about October, September, October, somewhere about September, October. And then sadly we had to leave and go into the Harz Mountains. Now, why we went to the Harz Mountains, I don't know. But we went to a little place called Wienenberg, C Squadron, B Squadron. A C Squadron went to a little place called Bad Harzburg, that was further up in the mountain, all pine trees, pine forests. Supposedly, at Bad Harzburg, the most beautiful girls in the world come from Bad Harzburg. This is what we were told. There was a lovely little town called Goslar, and it was the little town with the wooden overhanging, the windows overhang the streets. You know, the old, hadn't had a bomb on it, you know, it was miles out. In Wienenberg, we lived in a college, an agricultural college. There were all little rooms, just enough for two beds, and all corridors. A door came in here and went out there. Anyone coming out of that room had to come through your room to get to that room. It was a quaint place, and that was our. I've been back since, and it's still a college, but it's a girls' college. I would have liked to have gone in to look at our room, but of course we couldn't. But it's just the same as it was then, a girls' college. We got to know some of the population. We had dances there in Wienenberg. A small place. I don't know what we did to pass our time. I don't know what our duties were, really. Oh, we had border patrols. Some kind of border patrol through the winter. That was rather rough. The girls were coming out of the Russian zone to get into the British zone, to get away from the rapes. But we weren't allowed to let them over the border. It was court-martial if you let anyone over, and you were tramping about the snow at night on the border between the Germans, the Russian sector, and ours. And they would come pleading and begging to be let over, as much as your life was worth.
Did you confront some of these young ladies?
Oh, yes. On the border? Every night they were there, wanting to be over. I mean, if we refused them, they'd go further down and try elsewhere. Maybe some of them got through. Maybe some boys would... take pity on them, I don't know, but they'd come out of the Russian zone. They must have been raped and raped and raped. God knows what kinds of diseases they had. We just turned them back.
Had you any contact with Russians up to now?
We'd never had any contact at all. We'd seen them. I saw them at one certain... I think it was Hanover. It must have been Hanover. At the end of the street was a sort of... where the Russian sector was, in Hanover. It might have been Hanover. This is what I'm saying, you get yourself mixed up. Or it might have been Berlin. Probably Berlin, because I don't think Hanover was too near the Russian sector.
We'll come to that anyway when we talk about
yes.
Berlin.
But in a dreadful state, with the feet all covered in rags, and they looked like prisoners of war, Russian prisoners of war, I don't know. But I believe they had a rough time when they got back to Russia. Anyway, that's another story. But Wienerberg, we were there all over Christmas. We had our Christmas dinner in this big place at Wienerberg. I got a leave, I think, from Wienerberg. First home leave, I think, from Wienerberg. It wasn't too far away from where we eventually finished up at Wolfenbüttel. But from Wienerberg, we moved on to the Hermann Göring Works office block at Immendorf. It was just a big office block. I think there was 900 and odd steps. We were right on the top story. I think there was 900 and odd steps up. But... It was quite a long walk from Wienerberg, but a couple of the girlfriends, mine and another and her friend, came to visit. They walked, there was no public transport, they walked to Immendorf to see us and stayed the night. Because they couldn't stay in our office block, so they stayed in a barn that we'd found. And we threw two blankets down from the top story down to the chap below, who was a corporal, and we had the two blankets. Grey, and we went with them to the barn, and we slept the night with these two German girls in the barn. And then the following day, we couldn't really get the blankets back into the... But I think it was a Sunday morning. We couldn't get the blankets in. We gave them some slices of bread and a bit of cake or something, maybe a bar of chocolate, and off they set off to walk back. But we gave them the blankets, because these German girls used to make coats out of the mantles, they called them, but they were used to make overcoats out of the grey blankets. So they went back to Wienerberg, and I don't think we ever saw them anymore. From Immendorf, I was sent up to Berlin. NB squadron went up to Berlin to guard Spandau Prison. There was 8 people in Spandau Prison. I didn't do any guards. I took them and brought them back, and then to the commander-in-chief's residence, who was on the side of a lake, great big property, with a yacht on the lake and marvelous way of life, servants and God knows what. We were up there for 4.5 months. So I had such a wonderful time in Berlin. There was nothing left, but we had a club up there, the Churchill Club, at the top of the Kapferstendamm. The bridge over the river, there was trams running, which we didn't pay, of course, on the trams. The U-Bahn, the zoo was open. We had a German girl that took me and my friend all round the sides of Berlin, into the Reichstag. We saw Hitler's toilet. The Russians were working in the grounds when we went into the... You've seen the steps of the Reichstag with the pillars at either side. Well, those pillars were pitted with shrapnel. And when we went up the stairs and we went into the courtyard, the Russians to the left were working, clearing rubble. And when we went in as young cavalry officers, we looked like officers, we had our collar dogs in and our brass epaulets and the white lanyard. We looked very, very smart. And they all stood to attention and gave us a salute, and we gave them a nice one back. And then we went inside the building and we went into his toilet and used it, and then we went out into his bedroom, and we went out to the back of the Reichstag and looked for the place where he'd been burned, but we never found it. I said, well, you know, if there'd been a bonfire on November the 5th here, the place lasts for quite a long time. You can see where there's been a bonfire, but we never found anywhere. But I believe since then, just recently in fact, have found somewhere in that grounds tunnels with part of a meal on things. It was on the telly just recently. So we missed that. But anyway, we went all over Berlin and...
What state was Berlin in when you got to it?
It was... There was an awful lot of houses that were just walls. The smell was still there. You could... It was very, very hot summer. This was the following summer. This must have been the summer of 46. I think we got there about June. Or May or June, something like that. And you could still smell the bodies in the among the ruins. You could still smell that smell. And I used to say to my friends, they're still in there. It was the same at all the cities. You could still smell the rotting corpses in the rubble. It would take a long time to get them out. God knows what the rats and that were like round about there. It must have been dreadful. We were in some barracks, Spandau barracks. We were living in Spandau. Spandau wasn't too bad. The prison was all right. We had a little local pub, never been touched, just round from the corner from the barracks. And my new girlfriend lived just round the corner from the barracks, and that was the one that took us all over. We had a little park behind the barracks and a loose railing we could get through to save us going past the guard. There's lots of things I can't really say on here, because you don't know who's going to listen to it. But we had some marvellous times. And in this little pub, sometimes the Russians would come in, full of vodka, and we were sitting with our girlfriends, and they would stand on the table and shoot the pistols up into the air. And as soon as this started, we used to quietly creep out, because you couldn't talk to them, you couldn't talk sense. There were peasants. They didn't know what a watch, how to wind it. When a watch stopped, they threw it away. They hadn't the sense to wind it up, and you didn't know what a toilet was. Things had been brought up. They were very, very ignorant people, not like they are today. So that was that. What were you saying, Harry?
Did you get the opportunity to see any of the Spandau prisoners?
There was about 8 in there. I didn't see any because I didn't do any guards on there. I just used to take them. We did a month. We did a month on the guard, I think, if I remember rightly. The Americans did a month and the Russians did a month. That's how we worked it. But we had a guard all the time on the Commander-in-Chief's residence. But we're also doing night patrols with the armoured cars. Now, when we drove up to Berlin, I had the I was at the back with some people in, you know, some of the people, and we broke down. We kept breaking down. It was something to do with the fuel trouble. It must have been something in the fuel tank. Maybe one of the German kids had put something in. But it would go for so long, and then it would break down. It would go for so long, and then it would lock up again. And I had the fitter truck was with us. The fitter truck always travels at the back in case anyone breaks down. So it fit a half truck. And we messed on, the others had all gone. And we were in the Russian sector. It was very, very dangerous to be in the Russian sector, especially at night time. If you were caught walking the streets, they would pick you up, and you might be in there 3 days. You could be in there 15 years. I've just read of something, but I'll say that in a minute. And anyway, eventually we arrived at the barracks at Spandau, and they were just getting ready to have a mounted patrol to come out to find us, to fight their way to us. It was as bad as that. 1946. The Cold War was pretty hot at that time. But recently I've read it was on the people that had been in Berlin at the time that had been picked up on the streets. As we were, walking about at night time, but we kept in our own sector. But if they wandered into the Russian sector at night time and were picked up and they were charged with being spies, and some of them had done 15 years, and they had just disappeared from the face of the earth, we were very, very fortunate that we didn't fall into the same trap. But we were told not to enter the Russian sector at night time. Even during the day, it was a little bit... But the Reichstag was only two streets in underneath the Brandenburg Gate. You know the Brandenburg Gate with the seven horses of the Koplicks on the top of. It's underneath the Brandenburg Gate, and the second street on the right was the street where the Reichskanzlerei was. And right up, it was only a narrow little street, and the big building with the steps, and the little narrow street, and a flat part on the right, the remains of a bungalow. And that bungalow, that remains of this bungalow, was where Dr. Goebbels lived. And we went and had a look. Somebody told, I think it must have been this girl, told us that was where Dr. Goebbels was, had lived, his residence. If you remember, he killed himself and his wife and his six children, all the girls. Dreadful thing in this place. And we looked around the rubble and I found a nice brooch. And the brooch was gold, or it looked like gold. And the jewel in it was brown. I don't know what kind that is, onyx or something. And I brought it home and gave it to my mother. And she kept it all her life. And I think my sister, she handed, gave it to my sister afterwards. So it's still in the family now. I don't think it's ever been valued. I don't know. It belonged to the Goebbels family, so it was that.
Did the Germans speak to you of the Allies fighting the Russians, starting off another war?
We didn't associate with the Germans as such, but if ever someone ever... We had people working for us, and we used to talk to those. One sergeant at Berlin, he came to my room. When we came into the entrance of the barracks, the guard room was on the right-hand side, and our block was the first block, and right opposite squadron office. And we were the only two people in this block, for some reason or other. We were transport, and we could be called out, and the guard used to come and wake us up right opposite the guard room, to wake us up in the morning to go and collect guards. I think that's why we were handy for the guard room. And he came. I wanted to bring a radio home. I bought a Telefunken radio, beautiful press button tuning thing. You couldn't get them in England, with the Blaupunkt speaker. And I wanted a box to carry it in. He worked for us, so he got me a wooden box made, some straps. Somebody else made some carrying stuff, which I still have. And it was painted, and he painted my kit bag, or he got it painted, with my name in German letters, the number, and the cap badge in blue and gold, and my name at the bottom. That's in the regimental museum now, at Barnsley. I asked them if they would like it, and oh, they were delighted. Because it had been painted by a German prisoner. That was, I think, the thing. Anyway, these people worked... And this particular, he was a sergeant on the Russian front, and he showed me his leg, and it had been riddled with machine gun bullets. So I don't know how he managed to get home. He must have been, he can't have been captured by the Russians, because I don't think he would have survived. But he said it was, the German front was absolutely dreadful. That again was the cold weather, the cold, and trying to fight in that weather. A little bit like what we've had in the Ardennes, in the Reichswald. But he said it was dreadful. And there was no quarter given or taken there. They hadn't any time for the Russians. They were just animals. Well, I don't think we had any time we had a lot of time for the German soldier that we were up against. We never had, personally... I never heard of any atrocities committed against prisoners or against any of our boys by the people we were up against, because I think they knew that we'd have treated them the same. We were cavalry, as they were, you know, and I think we had something going between us. But we talked to the Germans, as you said, these people who worked for us, ex-soldiers, and they said, you know, we should have been fighting together, not against. And that's been said a lot. We're so much alike as good soldiers that we should have been fighting on the same side.
Did they pass comments about the quality of, say, the Americans that they'd faced? Or?
They didn't have a lot of time for the Americans. I think it was... I get the feeling that it was tougher to fight against the Poles. The Poles were good soldiers, against the Poles or the British or the Canadians, than against the Russian sector. I get that feeling that we had some very good fighting units against us. The 8th, the 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th Panzers and the 21st Panzer Group against us. And the Americans were saying, well, we weren't advancing fast enough, and we were, and Montgomery was too this and too that, and he wasn't patterning that was big stick and get on. Regardless of how many, we couldn't afford to lose. We'd been fighting a long time. We'd just about scraped the barrel. As that general said in January 45, had walked along the foxholes, and the faces were all young boys. We'd left the Normandy men all in the graves in Normandy. That wasn't so. We were young boys still. Well, I was only 20. So all those little white faces, we were all young boys still, you know. But reading the book, you'd think that all the Normandy people had been killed. Mind, a lot of the infantry were. 120%, some of them.
Was the black market operating in Berlin?
Oh, very much so. All over Germany. Cigarettes had a market value. I was telling you about in Hanover, where 10 marks for one cigarette and a pint of, or a glass of beer, probably half a litre, was 10 pfennigs. So for one cigarette you buy 100 pints of beer, 100 glasses of beer. It sounds impossible, but it's perfectly true. You got 10 glasses of beer for 1 mark. So for one cigarette, 10 marks, you got 100 glasses of beer. We lived like millionaires. And in Berlin, at the Churchill Club, we weren't allowed to take any of the girls in. They used to stand outside while we went in and had a meal. We'd bring them some cakes and things out. But we could have a turkey dinner. It was a naffy club. And there was a chap playing a violin, and the music used to come through the speakers. Requests had come round. This violin came round for requests. Did you want anything playing? And then the little orchestra would play. It would come through the loudspeakers. 3.5 marks for a turkey dinner. So for three of you going in to have a meal, it cost about one cigarette. You know, it was just unbelievable. Mind, if you bought in the sergeant's mess, if you bought a bottle of whiskey, it was 5 marks, which was only half a cigarette. And a bottle of champagne was 15, which was 1.5 cigarettes. So the value of your stuff was in cigarettes, not in marks. And we still used the little baffs. But German currency, you could change so much German currency if you'd drawn it on your paybook, because you had to get change, you know. Your baffs was to buy your naffy ration with, really. The market in Hanover was 10 cigarettes, 10 marks for one cigarette. But in Berlin it was 12.5 marks for one cigarette. Now a coffee was 500 marks a pound. And a tuppenny bar of chocolate, you know, the small bar of chocolate, was 50 marks, equivalent to 5 cigarettes. This is perfectly true. Those were the prices. And of course, young soldiers coming out from England, might spoil the job by giving them more cigarettes or something. But that was the price at the end of the war.
Have any other memories of Berlin?
Berlin, we had well, I was on the shooting team, and at Berlin there's a rifle range called Ruhleben ranges. Funny ranges, the targets are in pairs with trees in between, not like our targets with a whole line of targets. These were divided into pairs. I have an idea there were civilian ranges, but anyway, we were shooting at 500 yards. And I was on the regimental team, and I did an awful lot of rehearsing on the 303 range in Spandau Barracks. And it was red hot weather, and I shot with a rifle. We had the new Mark IV rifle with a rubber butt with three different sizes, and the sling was at the side of the butt rather than at the end, like the Lee Enfield. So I rehearsed with this and zeroed it in. The armourer got me, and I could pick the bull out of a 30 yards, just pick the bull out of a target and put another one. But till I got, my shoulder went really bad with no shirt, no protection, and I had to go and see the MO. And he gave me cream and so forth, but I mean, I still had to shoot. So he gave me, you know, the gun cotton, the yellow gun cotton. He gave me one of those and fastened it on as a pad for shooting. And I had that on when I went to Ruhleben, and they wouldn't allow me to use me Mark IV rifle. I had to shoot with an ordinary rifle. So I shot with a Canadian Ross, which I always liked. I believe these are First World War rifles. They're a Canadian Ross with an aperture backsight that slides up and down. And then you had the foresight with the guard round each side. If you entered your guard into your aperture, it meant that your foresight was dead in the middle. If you use your guard as a guide, you couldn't miss. And I got three bulls at 500 yards for the individual shoot, and a chap walked out from the trees into my line of fire, and I put my rifle down straight away. And the major that was standing, my major that was standing behind us, he was waving his arms, and my next two shots were two winners, so I scored 18. The chap that won was a Bisley man from the Control Commission for Germany, one of the civilian Bisley men with the leather, with his big shooting hat and his leather, and the way he wrapped his sling round his elbow and his little telescope. He had all the gear. He got 19. So I was second at the Ruhleben show. That was pretty good. And we were also second to the Grenadiers in the regimental shoots. The Grenadiers beat us, which for a cavalry regiment, that's not bad. Couldn't do anything with a pistol. Did pretty well with a Sten. We didn't use a Sten. We managed to get hold of some Thompson machine guns, which were not bad. And the targets moved across and towards you when you had so many bursts. I did very well on that, but the pistol let me down. Could never get away with the Smith & Wesson. Terrible things. Never got anything on the target. And rifle, I was very good on the rifle.
So these were competitions that you entered?
These were competitions at Ruhleben. They were inter-regimental shoots. The open shoot was for anybody. That was with the Control Commission won it.